Now we are talking with North Dakota Senator Curtis Olofsson, and we're talking about his amendment. Do you want to read it again,
yeah.
Mark?
Actually, it's really short, a short 18 words. It says, an increase in the federal debt requires approval from a majority of the legislatures of the separate states. And welcome back to the program, Senator Olofsson.
And just think of that. Actual federalism in play. Yeah. Actually utilizing the vertical checks and balances that our founding fathers gave us.
Absolutely. So let's get back into this discussion, Senator, about your amendment and the 20. You say right now that approximately 20 states are showing some interest, perhaps with eight of them having introducers there that will actually push forward the legislation or the legislation to create the amendment.
Yes, that's correct. We have eight, what I would call very committed prime sponsors, or roughly eight, and we have what I would classify as serious interest in over 20 states. So let me share with you, too, a couple of points here before we get into talking about the Article 5 process itself. The National Debt Relief Amendment has been thoroughly researched and endorsed by the Goldwater Institute in Phoenix, Arizona. They put extensive study into this, and they think this is the most powerful idea that they have seen for bringing our federal debt under control. Mm-hmm. Also, the National Debt Relief Amendment was adopted in January of this year as model legislation by the American Legislative Exchange Council, more commonly known by the acronym of ALEC.
Yep.
And the third point I'd like to make is that the National Debt Relief Amendment is a nonpartisan effort because the federal debt is a bipartisan problem and it will require bipartisan solutions. And that was shown in North Dakota and Louisiana. It passed in both chambers of both legislatures with bipartisan support. In fact, in the Louisiana House, it passed on a unanimous vote.
No kidding. No kidding. That is great news. I mean, and this shows that there is interest amongst the states. And it's odd because we've really had to get to this point. You know, if we'd have started talking about this 15 years ago or even 10 years ago, no one would have paid any attention to this. But now that our federal budget is in the mess that it is, that we're all sensing that Washington, D.C. has gotten far too large. It's great to see that there are state legislators that are now beginning to see their constitutional role in fixing this mess.
Well, I've been, as many people have been, looking with frustration at what has been happening in Washington, D.C., particularly in the last few years, and thinking that the Article 5 process was the way in which we could bring this back under control. And so I've been studying the various proposals that are floating around out there in the national level for an Article 5 amendment, and I never saw one that I thought had a reasonable chance of being adopted in 34 state legislatures and adopted in an Article 5 Amendments Convention and being ratified by 38 states.
Right.
And remember, unless all three of those things happen, an amendment is not going to be adopted. But I never saw one that I thought had a chance of walking through all three of those steps until I saw the National Debt Relief Amendment, and its strength is its simplicity.
Yep,
it's
absolutely.
Easy to understand. There's nothing to argue about. There's no debate. It is what it is, and you do not have to be a constitutional scholar or a Ph.D. in history or an attorney to understand it. It's very simple and very easy to understand it, and that makes it very saleable.
Yep. Senator, we've got a caller who wants to ask you a question. Let me bring him in. Scott, welcome to the Forgotten Men Show. You are live with Senator Curtis Olofsson from North Dakota. What's your question?
Hi, Mark. It's Scott. Hi, I have a simple question. I think when you read the amendment, you said a majority of the states. Can you explain your rationale behind why you landed on a majority versus two-thirds or three-quarters of the states?
Yes, Scott, that was discussed, whether it would be advisable to have it a supermajority or just a simple majority. And the consensus of the people who worked on this is that a simple majority would be sufficient to have this discussion at a national level, and we think that is the key. A supermajority, I think, is going to have more resistance from those who might be opposed to slowing the process down. So I think the simple majority is sufficient to accomplish what needs to be done, and that is to take the discussion out of Washington, D.C. to the states and involve the state legislature.
Well, I agree. I appreciate the explanation, and certainly anything the states can do to exercise any kind of authority over the federal government is better than what we have today. No doubt about that.
Exactly.
Great. Hey, thanks for the call, Scott. All right. Okay, so let's take a first swipe at these debunking of the myths surrounding the idea of an Article 5 convention. And really, it's not even – that's really a misnomer. It's really an amendment convention.
Well, let me ask you this, yeah. Senator. Can you hold over until the next segment if we were to take a break now and just get it knocked out and out of the way?
Absolutely. I can stay as long as you'd like to have me.
Okay.
Excellent.
Let's do that.
Excellent. Well, also, what you can do is out there in the listening audience, if you want to submit questions via our Facebook page, go to facebook.com/theforgottenmen. If you have questions, in addition to calling in at 301-694-9363, we can go ahead and ask the senator that question. We will come back on the other side of this break, continue talking with Senator Olufsen from North Dakota about the amendment that he's put forth, as well as that is happening all around the country. So if you're feeling strong-armed by the federal government, then keep it here, because you're listening to The Forgotten Men. Welcome back to The Forgotten Men, the show that's putting pressure on those Washington deceivers. You can call us, talk to the senator from the state of North Dakota. He's State Senator Curtis Olufsen, and he is a proponent of the National Debt Relief Amendment. I believe, let's clarify, who was behind that amendment. Senator, can you let us know? It was the Goldwater Institute, correct?
The original organization that formulated this idea was RestoringFreedom.org, a Texas-based nonprofit which seeks solutions to America's challenges. And you can find more information out about the amendment and the organization at RestoringFreedom.org. And also the Goldwater Institute has thoroughly researched and endorsed the idea. There's a lot of good information on the Goldwater website, too, if you go to their Article 5 page.
Yes. Excellent. Thank you.
All right, Senator, let's get right into this debunking the myth of the runaway Constitution and why we don't need to fear this idea of the states getting together. And I want to begin by reading Article 5 of the United States Constitution. So, folks, when you're listening, I have in my hands here the actual Constitution of the United States, which the founders put together and then ratified, that is now the law of the land. Article 5 says this.
Each elected official swears an oath to support and defend this document, which we all know that they completely trample upon it day in and day out.
Right. With the exception of a few. This is what it says. The Congress, whenever two-thirds of both houses shall deem it necessary, shall propose amendments to this Constitution.
Then keyword.
Or on the application of the legislatures of two-thirds of the several states shall call a convention for proposing amendments. So I'll let you take it from there, Senator.
Yes, and what's most interesting about that opening sentence of Article 5 is that everyone should make note that contained in the same sentence are the two methods by which amendments can be proposed to the Constitution.
Yes.
The states have equal power to Congress.
Mm-hmm.
And also, what is notable is it does not say for rewriting the Constitution or a constitutional convention. It is a convention for proposing amendments. Nowhere in Article 5 or anywhere else in the Constitution is there any process that is provided to rewrite the Constitution. It isn't there.
Right.
In fact, the Founding Fathers considered and rejected language for Article 5 to provide a process for a, quote, constitutional convention, unquote, not once, not twice, but four times. There were proposals that we have a process for rewriting the whole Constitution, and they rejected that four times in favor of the current language of Article 5. So the two processes are either two-thirds vote to both chambers of Congress can propose an amendment, or on application of the 34 states. And for those who fear a runaway convention, I'd like to point out that we have a runaway convention ongoing
exactly.
In front of us each and every day. It's called Congress. They've racked up over $14.5 trillion in debt. It's a runaway every single day.
And that's the debt increase, the debt limit increase that just occurred, they've pretty much already reached that. It's the $400 billion the incremental that they put together. It's already been reached because you had to put back into case all of the tricks that the Treasury Secretary used with federal pensions, etc. That's already been reached. Right. So we've already hit it. We've already hit the incremental raise.
Exactly, and this is going to continue. This problem has been growing for many years. It has been growing despite the fact that we've changed the people in Congress.
Right.
We have changed the party in control more than once and more than twice. So those are old solutions that are proven not to work. The problem is systemic.
Yes.
We, the people, have created a system whereby Congress has become a contest to see who can get their hands on the most money, bring that back home to their constituents, and then we reward them for that by reelecting them. The problem is systemic, and in order to solve the problem, we have to change the system.
Boy, Senator, you just hit the nail on the head. It is a systemic problem, and it honestly gets tiring after a while, and I know you struggle with this in your own state, but people continue to look to the next election as the point that which everything is going to turn around, the skies are going to open, the rays from heaven are going to descend upon America, and everything is going to be made right if we just get the right person or the right party in control. And yet that runs right against history.
Absolutely. Albert Einstein said insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result.
Exactly right. And so we've got to start looking at new ways to consider structural or systemic change. And the founders, it's so funny. I wrote this morning on a post. I said, you know, we call the founders wise and all and well thought out and forward thinking in their creation of this document and everything except Article 5. You know, they're wise when it came to Article 1, Article 2, Article 3, Article 4, 6, and 7. But when it comes to 5, suddenly the founders ain't very bright because they actually empowered the states to do something. And we are just in a time period where the states, because of what happened in 1865, are looked down upon. In the second hour of the show, Senator, we're going to be playing some clips by Al Sharpton last week, who said that states' rights are now code words for slavery. That's what he's accusing us of now.
Yeah.
So the founders are these brilliant people, as long as it doesn't have to do with states' rights, yet that's what Article 5 is.
Yeah, right. And if we have time before the next break, let's walk through the steps that would need to happen in order for a runaway convention to happen and for a bad amendment to be adopted. If we've got a...
Yep, go ahead. Let's do that now.
Okay.
Let's do that now.
Yep. Okay, so 34 states submit an application for the same amendment, and by the way, the resolutions have to be worded identically, and in the resolution it states the amendments convention shall be entirely focused upon and exclusively limited to the subject matter of proposing for ratification an amendment which says that an increase in the federal debt requires approval from a majority of the legislatures of the separate states. So 34 states passed the same resolution with the same limiting language. They would then choose their delegates to send to the convention. Now, let's think about who would state legislatures choose as delegates to a convention. Would every state legislature go out there and pick the most loony, crazy, kooky political extremist they could find? Of course not.
Right.
They would appoint as delegates to the convention responsible people with a proven track record of public service or service in business or law. They would pick responsible people who would go to that convention with the mandate in hand that from their state legislature, you go to that convention and you consider this idea and this idea only. But let's say for the sake of argument that these heretofore responsible, respected public servants get to the convention and a majority of them collectively somehow magically develop amnesia and insanity. And they're going to thumb their nose at their state legislature back home and say, we're going to open this thing up to anything and everything under the sun.
Right.
At that point, there would be court action filed, which would declare, if the courts rule correctly, the convention should be declared null and void because it's gone beyond the scope and call of the convention. But let's say the courts have developed amnesia and insanity and they let the convention go forward and say, fine, go do whatever you want. So then the convention comes up with some crazy idea. Let's repeal the First and Second Amendment. No more free speech, no more right to bear arms, and let's send that to the states for ratification. At that point, Congress has a ministerial capacity to analyze the results of the convention, and they should say, we can't send this to the states for ratification because you've gone beyond the scope and call of the convention.
Exactly.
But let's say Congress has amnesia and insanity, which would be most likely of all of those entities. And they say, okay, we're going to send this to the states for ratification. Here comes the ultimate protection,
yes,
wisely designed into the process by our founding fathers in their infinite wisdom. Here's the key point. Unless and until 38 states ratify a proposed amendment, the Constitution is untouched and nothing changes. So for anyone who wants to preach to us that we should fear the Article 5 process and we cannot use it, I ask them to do this. Provide for all of us your official list of 38 states that you fear would ratify an extremist, radical, or dangerous amendment. Give us your list.
That is such a slam dunk argument. I got to tell you, Senator, that is it is one we will use on this show going forward.
Yeah, I, when we go to break, I have a question for you on that as well, that I have a little bit of an idea that I think will also help solidify this in a lot of our listeners' mind.
But I want to come back to this, and because you're essentially saying, and this is where I think we've got to use the heads and the brains that God gave us to think this through a little bit. We've been stoked with fear for generations about this idea. The John Birch Society has been all over this for quite some time, and you can't do this because undoubtedly, if we call an Article 5 amendment constitution, we will become the Soviet Union overnight. We will become the USSR. But it completely dismisses the silver bullet, or the greatest protection, I should say, that the founders gave us. 38 of our fellow states have to ratify becoming the new USSR. That is not going to happen. We've just got to use our heads a little bit.
Let's start going through the list. Do you think Texas is really going to do that?
Yeah.
Do you think North Dakota is going to do that? How about Idaho and Montana?
Oklahoma,
do you think
Louisiana,
Oklahoma is going
to
do that? So, I mean, the question begs, do you really think that's going to happen?
Right.
Well, it's absolutely ludicrous to suggest that 38 states are going to ratify some crazy extremist radical amendment. You're absolutely right. It's not going to happen. And that is the ultimate protection that our founding fathers wisely put into the process. I actually asked the state director of the John Birch Society here in North Dakota to provide for me the official John Birch Society list of 38 states that the society fears will ratify a bad amendment, and that left him totally befuddled. He, of course, didn't have such a list, and I encouraged him to formulate one as soon as possible so that the citizens of North Dakota would know what 38 states we need to fear. And another way to look at it is this. It only takes 13 states to veto a bad amendment.
Actually, that's right.
It only takes 13 chambers of 13 states to veto a bad amendment.
That's
idea.
A good point. That's right. And, you know, I even take it, and let me play this out with you on the air a little bit farther. Even if, let's say, 38 states had amnesia and forgot their constitutional obligations and what they were sent to the convention for, and somehow passed these and it got to the states and the states ratified them, I am firmly believing that there are some number of states would gather together, and just as Thomas Jefferson wrote in the Declaration of Independence, would abolish or severely alter their relationship to the new Constitution. That would be the ultimate fail-safe, is some states would just say,
not going to do that.
We're not doing this anymore.
Well, it would never get that far because
right.
38 states are not going to ratify a bad idea.
Yep.
End of discussion.
You are right. And this is why I think part of the problem is so many people don't know this process. This is why we really were excited about having you on the program today. We've got listeners from across the country. These are new ideas. They've heard this term constitutional convention. They've heard it over and over in the years, mainly in the context of don't do it, be terrified of it.
Run for the hills!
Right. There are interests in Washington, D.C., the think tank row down there, that desperately do not want a constitutional convention because then all their power disappears in Washington, D.C., the think tank side of it.
Surprise.
Exactly.
What a surprise.
And so now we're trying to reach to the average American, the average citizen out there, and say, listen, use your thinking here. There's no reason to be afraid here.
Right. And one thing that is important, too, it shouldn't even be called a constitutional
exactly.
convention because it is not. Right. It is an amendments convention. And as I mentioned earlier on, there are entities, and we just mentioned the John Birch Society, and there are others who have empowered themselves by using fear-mongering over the Article 5 process for decades. And that can be totally debunked by just some simple, basic research and some basic, rational thought.
And when we submit to fear, that's when bad things happen.
Exactly.
Well, let's talk about fear. Okay, even if you fear the process, what about the fear we faced when we were attacked at Pearl Harbor? What about the fear we faced at D-Day?
Yeah.
If you have fear overcome it, because we have to take some bold action, because the debt that we are facing is a serious and imminent threat to the very sovereignty of our country.
That's
so
right.
Choose which fear you want to live with.
Yeah, the path that we're on, we know where it ends.
Yeah.
And it is not good.
Right, right. I want to direct everybody who's in the listening audience over to the Goldwater Institute. There is a fact sheet over there called the 10 Facts to Rebut the Mythology of a Runaway Convention. So just type in your Google Goldwater Institute. It'll take you to their website, and you'll be able to find these 10 facts. Josh?
We're talking with State Senator of the great state of North Dakota, Curtis Olofsson, and he is a proponent. And we're talking about the National Debt Relief Amendment. We just walked through the process of why we should not be afraid, and the steps of the whole amendment process, why we should not be afraid of those different steps, and why it makes sense to have this amendment convention, if you will. And we're going to just talk with the state senator. We're going to be putting together something for our blog, exclusive for our blog, those steps that you can read, reread, and share it with friends of yours that you're having this conversation with, because we know this is something that people seem to fear without even really understanding why they fear it. So, Senator, thanks again for continuing on with us this morning, or this afternoon.
Yeah, that's right. This afternoon, this morning.
This morning for you.
Yeah, I want to say a couple things here real quick, Senator. Number one, if people want to get in touch with you, and some legislators are listening to this program today, if they want to contact you, what's the best way to get a hold of you and talk about this amendment process?
The best way to get a hold of me is my email address, which is very simple. My first the first initial of my name, C. And then my last name, Olofsson, C. Olofsson, O-L-A-F-S-O-N, at ND, for North Dakota, at ND.gov.
Okay, very good. And so your next steps with this around the country are what? I mean, you're going to be connecting with other state legislators in their individual states to try to get this legislation put into their states at this point?
Well, right now I'm working with the RestoringFreedom.org folks, and we have... just in the last 10 days or so, had at least a half a dozen conference calls with
really?
Legislators in other states. We are lining up prime sponsors and creating interest, and a lot of legislators are intrigued by the idea. They continue to be frustrated with what's happening in Washington, and people are becoming less enamored with the balanced budget amendment, which is getting us a lot of attention.
Good.
Again, we say that the balanced budget amendment and the national debt relief amendment can peacefully coexist. As far as we are concerned, the more provisions that are in place to make it more difficult for Congress to borrow and spend money, the better.
Yeah, absolutely right.
But we have what is a much simpler, much more effective idea, and I tell people that I am going to continue to ride this horse in the race because I think it has the best chance to get across the finish line first, and time is of the essence.
And I want to just visit real quickly. We have a few moments left. We are at a pick-your-fear moment. It's either stick with a fear that is legitimate, that these guys are running a debt that is going to bankrupt our entire way of life. Either we live with that, or we overcome our fear to real change, which is through the Article 5 Amendment Convention process.
Well, and again, you can easily overcome any fears by just some basic research and study of Article 5 and the process and some rational thought. Mm-hmm. But if you still can't get past that fear, then you're right. You need to pick which thing is more fearful for you.
Yeah, right.
This debt is about to take us down.
Yeah, exactly. And so we need more and more legislators like you to stand up. And I got to tell you, from a personal viewpoint, Senator, this has been a real shot in the arm for me. We've been doing this program for a couple of years now, and you know, the ball is hard to move on these issues. There's so much inertia heading towards Washington, D.C. during the election season. Everything that seems to affect our lives always seems to come out of Washington, D.C., and it just gets a little bit discouraging at times, thinking we're moving the ball. So you've been a real shot in the arm personally, just seeing what you're doing and what the Restoring Freedom, is that right?
RestoringFreedom.org
are doing. I'm going to connect with those folks down there more here and try to move this ball a little bit through that side as well. Because we are at a historic period of time, and we have an interesting alignment of stars, if you will, that give us chance to really reset and restore what the founders hoped for in 1776?
Well, I think that anyone who is sitting around waiting for solutions to this problem to come from Washington, D.C., is going to be sorely disappointed.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And we went ahead on our Facebook page, Forgotten Men, Facebook.com/TheForgottenMen. We posted the way to get in touch with you, your email address. If there's legislators out there that want to do so, go right to our Facebook page. And also, we just posted the 10 facts to rebut the mythology of a runaway convention put together by the Goldwater Institute.
Well, Senator, it's been an absolute pleasure getting to meet you and talk to you on air. I hope to have more contact with you going forward as we work together to try to advance these notions of federalism and restoring the founders' idea of limited government and a robust state government.
And I will, this is Joshua, I will reach out to you via email here this weekend, and we can put together the ideas on that blog.
I've got them prepared as a document already.
Love it. Love it. Thank you for promoting this. Thank you for getting out there and having a backbone. Thank you for actually standing up for federalism and standing up for the vertical checks and balances that our founding fathers gave us.
You're welcome. It's been a pleasure to be on with you, and I hope people will take this idea and take it to their state legislator. If you are a legislator, please contact me. If you are not, please contact your state legislator and ask them to contact me regarding this idea. And when they send me an email, I answer it personally. In North Dakota, we do not have a staff. We do not have an office. But we do, however, have a real nice budget surplus.
We'd love to hear that. Thank you very much for being with us. Appreciate it.